this week's Brown Art Network episode, we'll be having a conversation surrounding the fairly new development of neo-Desi music and the much-needed representation it provides for the South Asian American community. Joining us in our discussion today is Royal, a Bengali-American multi-instrumentalist singer, a cappella arranger, and neo-Desi music producer who recently dropped his debut album called Shanak, which is now available on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, etc. Put a link in the description for you guys. So welcome, Royal. Thank you for being on.
Thank you so much, Kirti and Sneha. It's so great to be here.
Of course, yeah. And I guess, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself in your own words, as well as your kind of journey into the music industry?
For sure, for sure. So I go by the name of Royal, and you heard the long list of what we give for it in terms of PR. But mainly, I'm a musician and I'm a producer, and I love what I do. I started out in music when I was very young. My parents saw that I had an affinity towards the keyboard, so they put me in piano lessons. I was learning Western classical piano lessons in the beginning, and then it really took off from there. I started to teach myself some other instruments along the way. And then, so I'm originally from the Bengal region, so my family's from Kolkata, and I was born nearby there. And then we immigrated to the U.S. when I was younger. And so I was raised in Cleveland, and so that's why I refer to myself as Bengali-American. Those are the two identities that my music and my entire identity really draws from those roots and those branches, as I like to say. So I was in Western classical piano, started to pick up more instruments along the way. And then when I went to college, I was a part of a Desi Fusion a cappella group. It was competitive, and then a Desi Fusion dance team, which was also competitive. And it was the first time that I saw these, you know, these two worlds really colliding with each other and all of the music that was coming out from those respective areas. And pretty soon I started to help out with the creation of the products that were going out. So on the a cappella side, I was creating these fusion a cappella arrangements that were in different languages, different genres, different styles. And then on the dance side, I was doing the music production. So making the mashups and the mixes that the teams would dance to and that my team would dance to while I was in college. And then it got to a certain point where I was using a lot of other people's music, and I had never really explored my own music, creating original music and incorporating Bangla, which is my mother tongue. And so I started creating original music, and I tried to make that the focus, where I was trying to write in Bangla, trying to write in English, and see the products that I would be able to come up with. And I love the direction that it was going. It felt very new, felt very fresh, and most importantly, it felt very rewarding. I felt like I was digging back into my past, my family's past, and then throughout it, just being able to be more in touch with my roots and with my culture, but in a way that still felt very American, if you know what I mean, where, you know, kind of unabashedly fusing things, not really paying attention to rules or anything like that. In my mind, if something sounds good, then that's the most important thing. And that's taken me to the point where I am today. After a bunch of singles and different things, I thought it was time to try and create a long-form project. And the result of that is my debut album, Shanak.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I remember your PR team sent over your single, Dosh, before, just to kind of like preview what your music was. And I like listened to it. I really enjoyed it. And I thought it was
really cool. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, and she was telling how like you started like the neo-Desi genre or form kind of with your style of music. And so I think that's really cool that you kind of made your own niche because you couldn't find it. Can you describe to our listeners a little bit what that like genre is, or like what the, I guess, the defining qualities of what the neo-Desi music is?
Definitely, yeah. I kind of came up with that term around like 2020, 2021 region when I was like exploring the type of music that I was making. Because I think in our heads, we have an understanding of what Desi music is. And the expectation is that it's coming out from the subcontinent. And there's very like characteristic sounds. You know the type of melody structure that you're going to get. You know, for lack of better terms, somebody's going to describe it as like, oh, that sounds Indian. Or, oh, that sounds Pakistani. That sounds Bangladeshi, Sri Lankan. It's everything is just related to the subcontinent. But I felt like the music that I was creating had so many influences from so many other genres. Because I was raised here in America and exposed to so many different music cultures, music subcultures, I felt like I needed a term that was more encompassing of that so that I would be able to distinguish myself in terms of if I tell a listener, hey, this is a song, you know, that I would love for you to listen to, what's the best way for them to understand what it is? And so in the 90s, soul music kind of took this transition as well, where they started the genre, which was called Neo Soul. And the whole idea was that soul music plus an influence of jazz, funk, hip hop, rap, blues, everything all in one, which felt like there was less boundaries. So I really took inspiration from there and put that together to be Neo Desi music. So the expectation that a listener hopefully has is that there's elements of Desi music, Desi instrumentation, but it's really an unabashed way of pulling a bunch of different influences together and making a cohesive product.
I think that's really awesome that you were able to kind of bring these two or multiple cultures together under one music, because I feel like oftentimes in our community, we are searching for media or content that's relatable to us on both sides of the world. So I think it's great that, you know, there is this kind of new form of music that is being created and hopefully picked up in the future. Why do you think Neo-Desi music is so important and relevant for the growing South Asian American community in our generation and the generation after us?
Yeah, I think it's really important. It's still very early on, so it's tough for me to make, you know, generalizations in terms of what I think the impact of it could be. I think there's a lot of artists that technically fall into this genre, but I think that our habit right now is to define things by their overarching genre or their language. And so when you come across music, as is prevalent in a lot of different styles of music right now, which is transcending those boundaries, where you have people who are singing a bilingual song, trilingual song, because of all the different places that they were growing up, the type of music that they listen to, what they're interested in, I feel like it's really important because it's representative of what's happening right now, where globalization has made it such that I could be sitting here listening to a song that's come out of Nigeria and is maybe spoken into a very specific dialect from that region, but all of a sudden it's a global hit. And I think that that's such a beautiful thing. And I think that for us, in terms of the larger kind of Desi community or brown community, however you want to define it, I think it's important because we have that same thing, right? There's all these different regions that are within this subcontinent that so many people derive their influences from. And I think that the more that people are able to tap into that and feel like they have a home, maybe that home is Neo-Desi music, then they'll be able to express themselves freely. And then the audience is going to understand where they have to go if they're looking for music like that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Globalization does definitely, it's very powerful, like you said. And I think a lot of times when we have a few singers or contact us about their music, it's always like R&B with the Desi twist, or it's right. like hip hop with the Desi twist. So I think this is a great, like, I guess, home, like you said, like a corner where you can kind of blend whatever you want with whatever you can, because there are a lot of subcultures within like Desi and brown community.
Definitely. And yeah, I think it's interesting that you bring that up, because a part of that is marketing, right? It's like, how do you get people to tap in? So maybe the best way is to say, like, let's take a song like Dosh. Maybe the best way for me to describe it would be R&B with a Desi twist. But if we unpack that further, it's kind of disingenuous, right? Because there's so many different, there's Bangla and English in the song. It's R&B, but, you know, there's folk instrumentation that's in it. There's traditional percussion instrumentation that's in it. It's like that simplification that we do to try and make it more marketable kind of robs it of the authenticity. And so I feel like if you just expand that umbrella term further up, then there's a little bit more freedom that people can feel and not feel like they have to like pigeonhole themselves into that thing of trying to be as relatable as possible. It's like the binary between, you'll have people that they'll say that I'm a brown musician versus I'm a musician who happens to be brown. And that distinction is really important, right? Because already you're thinking, oh, okay, like, you probably make English music if you're saying you're a brown, you're a musician who happens to be brown. Whereas if I say I'm a brown musician, then, oh, you must only tap into your culture. But most of us are somewhere in that spectrum, right? It's not really that binary. But it's interesting that the role that the marketing has to play, because in a new field like this, you have to figure out how to capture the target audience.
Right. That's a good point. Cause like, yeah, when I think about R&B, and then if you say it with a Desi twist, I'm like, okay, so maybe a fusion of Bollywood or something like that.
Right,
like, that's
right.
Like the first thing that people think about. So that's a really good point. I guess with that, how do you see the genre expanding? Do you think other artists will kind of adapt this type of concept of Neo-Desi, or is that maybe your hope? that the genre is something.
I hope so, and I think that it's happening rather naturally. Where when I was in college and I was exploring the mix and mashup scene, where it was really like just joining together two things, where it's like, okay, here's a Bollywood song, and here's a Western like hip hop song. We're just going to put it together, and it's like a verse of this, a chorus of this, a verse of this, and that's how the structure was really laid out. I think that as we have gone on, especially the creators who are making original music, are trying to be more intentional about the fusion and not have it feel so choppy, for lack of better words. Because while the choppiness can be really relatable, you kind of restrict yourself, right? Because maybe you want to have a completely Western instrumentation base, but you want to explore a bunch of different languages as you're going through the verse and chorus. How would you define that? So I think that the push is happening, and there's a lot of artists that are pursuing it. They all might not be using the term neo-desi to describe it, but I would think that we're all kind of moving towards that same goal.
No, and I think that's really awesome that is happening, because again, like I said, like I think growing up, we always kind of thrive to define that for ourselves. You know, right. We're always looking for that next TV show or movie with, you know, South Asian actors, South Asian American actors. And you know, music is in kind of in the same realm, where we're just waiting for that next sort of fusion or combination of the two, which is something that's only really happening now. And I'm excited to see where it kind of goes in the future. And see, you know, if or when the community embraces it. I'm excited to see what that would look like. I guess, like, kind of shifting, I mean, kind of going off that a little bit, do you see the older generation, the generation before us within the South Asian community, you know, aunties, uncles, kind of embracing the neo-desi genre? Or do you think there's some rejection of it because it's not, you know, this pure form of desi music?
Mm-hmm. It's a loaded question, because I think that it's impossible to remove the societal aspects and the political aspects out of it, because I would define the auntie uncle generation as those who had immigrated here. Me and my parents are technically from that generation, because I immigrated from India here and we grew up together here. So I think there's a distinction between auntie uncle generation whose kids also had to grow up in America with them versus auntie and uncle generation that were able to understand and then had kids, you know, this like first generation versus second generation. Myself, I'm probably somewhere in the middle. So I think that the answer would be different for somebody who's second generation, whose parents had come here, gone all the way through, really understood the culture here and everything that makes America, America, and then had kids. And so the auntie uncle generation, let's say like my parents, I think they're intrigued, because I think that there's such an aspect of assimilation that happens early on in the immigration period, where it's all about how can you blend in and not stand out. And now you have all these different artists are like, no, we're not going to blend in. Here's all the different ways that we stand out. So I think that that can be fear provoking in the generation, or it can be really exciting for them as well. Because ultimately, it's everybody expressing themselves. And I think that in the Desi diaspora in particular, arts and entertainment are such an integral part of our culture that no matter who is expressing themselves, it's always great to see. I think that you will see differences in terms of how certain styles of music are picked up by the generation. I would imagine that music that they didn't have exposure to when they were in their country of origin or early on when they had come to America, this genre that comes to mind is R&B and hip hop. I think that's the one that there's usually the most like, I'm not really sure what this is, or maybe there's some negative perception of that style of music. But for those of us who are raised here, we grew up with that style of music also growing up, you know, from 80s, 90s onwards, and then to what it's become now with all the different influences. So it's a loaded question, because I feel like it's different depending on where somebody is in the generation. I think it's interesting just even within our generation to see like what is acceptable and what is cool and maybe what was not so cool 10 years ago, just a simple thing of, oh, okay, I'm singing in English and then I'm going to switch to Bangla. Maybe 10 years ago, somebody would have been like, oh, this sounds so weird. And I still get comments like that, no doubt. But that's just because we're not used to it. So a long-winded way of saying that I think it depends. But I think for the most part, they're curious. It's a matter of translating that curiosity into interest that benefits us as a whole.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I think curiosity is also, I think, well, the music, the powerful thing about it is it can, like, drive, like, motivation for a lot of things historically, like we've seen in society. Like, I like it, like, great, is, like, hip-hop, R&B, and the blues was, like, pivotal for America. I'm sure in the South Asian there is some sort of equivalent. So I think in the sense of resonating with, like, a new style or a new way of expressing how we feel, I think, like you said, curiosity will lead. I think it'll lead to good things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I hope so.
Out of curiosity, do you think if there is someone in the older generation that is very adamantly against, like, this new form of genre or whatever, mm-hmm. Do you see any, I guess, point or reason to kind of fight them on it and be like, no, you need to like this. Like, come on, this is the new generation. Like, get used to it. Do you see any reason to kind of fight them on that or push them into something that they might not be comfortable with?
Depends on what the goals are from the conversation, because I would think that if, let's say, it's a close relative and, you know, you really want them to be about this new style of music because you want to take them to concerts and you want to, you know, have these different experiences with them, maybe you're going to push a little bit harder. I think there's another, I know we always end up falling back into society and politics, but that's kind of how it goes. You know, there's this aspect called time crystallization, where when immigrants come to a different place and after they've immigrated, their knowledge of where they came from is stuck in time. They don't have an understanding of what's happening there. So when people here listen to maybe the type of music that I make or some of the other artists make, where we're very genreless, there's not really boundaries in terms of the language. A lot of people will say that, you know, it's not pure. You're sacrificing the purity of language and this and that. But if you go to India right now, or you go to Bangladesh, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, they're doing the exact same thing. And I think that, you know, when there's platforms like Coke Studio, whether it's Coke Studio Bangla, Coke Studio in Pakistan, I think those, you really saw all these integration of the newer sounds and the newer influences. It's still happening over there. But because maybe here we're also not paying attention, we think that we're the only ones, and then the people who are maybe criticizing us are like, oh man, look at the Americans. They're always like sacrificing the purity and doing this and that. But everybody is exploring. The whole world is exploring. We're just not maybe as tapped in as we need to be because we're all in our little like echo chambers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, music, I feel like music also is very much tied to identity. So, like, I feel like you find pride in what you listen to because you connect with it in some way, shape, or
right,
form.
Right.
Like you said, those silos, those identities are very different. So, like, that could be where that rift is. It's, like, not really understanding what we resonate with. But
Everyone is entitled to their opinions. It's fine.
It's fine.
I think the most important thing is that if somebody doesn't like something, that's fine. As long as it becomes, if it stays as preference, when it becomes like judgment and hatred and then expression of that hatred, that's what I really have a problem with, because I think that it doesn't help anybody. You know, criticism because of preference versus criticism because maybe you're knowledgeable in an aspect of, let's say, music production or music composition, and you're trying to see everybody else around you get better. I think those are two very different things. And I think that, you know, right now, the like social media climate, because it's so like it sells to be controversial and it sells to be hateful. I think that if somebody comes across something that they don't like, rather than being like, I don't like it, maybe I'll just ignore it, it's like straight to the comments. Oh my goodness, this is the worst thing that I've ever heard. You're a disgrace. You know, this and that.
Right.
So, you know, they're trying to do it for the likes rather than trying to see what can come if we're all kind of helping each other out.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. But yeah, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about like your process, because I think that's super interesting, especially with the fact that you're coming out with a debut album. But before I kind of go into that next question, I just thought of something. I was curious. When you're putting music together for like the acapella groups and like the dance network, have you seen the evolution of the way that things are mashed up in the circuits, like change, and is it changed for the better? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, that is a great question, because I think my answer 5 years ago is very different from right now, because 5 years ago is when I graduated from college. And at that time, I thought that things overall in a cappella circuit, as well as in the dance circuit, I thought that they were progressing again to a place where there was more emphasis on cohesion. And what I didn't realize is that so many people still didn't know about, let's say, Bollywood mashups and mixes and all of these things. And then like Instagram Reels, TikTok, all of these things exploded and threw this like previous form of music, in my mind, in terms of how long it's been around, into the forefront. And now all of a sudden, it's almost like we semi-regressed, because those who know that these mixes and mashups and this style has been around for a very, very long time. But because of the sudden accessibility that everybody had, both in terms of creating it as well as being able to distribute it, I honestly think that we have regressed a little bit in terms of the technical aspects of it. I think that because now everything is like, okay, how can I grab your attention in 15 seconds? And that too, within the first 2 seconds, it sells more to be able to just be like, okay, here's a Bollywood song. I've sang 2 lines of it. And now let me sing an English song. Here's 2 lines of it. Bam, 15-second video, right? Goes viral. People see that and they're like, that's what sells right now. I'm going to keep creating like that because I need to make content. I need to generate. I need to continue to grow. Whereas being able to create these like cohesive products where you're trying to intentionally do fusion rather than have it be more like chopped mix mashup type of style, it takes more time. And I think that time is not something that a lot of creators who are focused on content creation right now, they maybe don't have, because they see that it doesn't sell, right? It's going to be tough. I'm even imagining right now, you know, we dropped the debut album and we're always trying to figure out different marketing content. All of the stuff that I come up with in my head is at least 3 minutes long, because I want to bring you into the process. I want to show you like, okay, this is what I started from. Let me tell you about the history of this instrument. Let me bring this in, and then let me put it all together and present it to you. There's no way to do that in 15 seconds, and it's going to be very hard for me to pull you in 2 seconds at that. So I think that I'm hopeful that this is just a swing in the other direction, and then it'll again continue forward. As people grow tired of this, and they want more. They want more original fusion. They want to hear more languages and songs, as that becomes more normalized.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation, because I didn't realize, like you said, how social media has really affected both of those, like, I guess, platforms. And like you said, like in the very beginning, like earlier on, it was very much storyline. Like there was a plot and you could understand the music connected to the plot. And I kind of understand what you're saying. And now it's kind of very like, let's hit Bhangra, let's hit Bollywood, let's hit classical, let's hit all the segments we need to get like the judging done. So that's a great observation. Yeah, I hope it's just like, it's right now in the spotlight with social media and it kind of passes, because it would be great to kind of go back to the old times in that way.
And it's like, and I think what's interesting is that the music producers overall, like anybody that creates music, and the audience have to come to an agreement. And this is something I've always thought about, is that just because a creative can give you a diluted product doesn't mean that we should, right? Because our expectation is that the audience will begin to be receptive to the newer things that we're doing, and not just like spoon feeding the same old. And so I think what's happened right now is just a swing in the unfortunate direction where you have a lot of different creators who have seen how lucrative it is to be very simple and to be, you know, very choppy, and it sells. So as somebody, if your main focus is, I'm just trying to pick up followers, I'm trying to pick up this and that, I'm trying to create sponsorship opportunities so I can put food on my table, your priorities are going to be very different from somebody who's like, oh, I want to make a new genre. I want to, you know, incorporate all these languages and things. So it's a shift. Hopefully it'll shift back in the other direction.
Right. Yeah. yeah, let's kind of diving into your like your like the debut album, like the process. Can you walk us through kind of like how you kind of went through like picking the themes, like the how you're gonna do the music, and like how you kind of like went through, I guess, the whole process? Because I know from the past answers, you're very like very technical musicality wise. So like, would love to kind of understand like what process you went through for your first like your first album.
Definitely, definitely. The first one was getting over the emotional hump, which was, am I even in a position to make a long form project? Like, have I done enough work in my craft to be able to put out a long form project? Because working on a single versus working on an album are different in the sense that once you work on the single, you're already thinking about like, all right, when am I going to put this out? Like, you know, what does the release strategy look like? This and that. The album is a lot more difficult because for me, I'm always striving for perfection, and that can sometimes detract because now I'm making a song and being like, I'm not releasing this for years. And so let me have to listen to it over and over again and continue to be like, I could have done better here. I could have done this different. I could have done that different. So the first step was like, okay, I'm committing to making an album and being okay with what I make in the beginning of the album process might be very different from what I make towards the end of the album process. And so after getting that over that initial, a big part became planning because I was in my fourth year of medical school when I started working on the album. The first part of fourth year of med school is a lot more time heavy because you're doing a lot of your acting internships and the specialty that you want to go into. And then you have interview season that comes out as well. And then things start to relax a little bit as you, you know, prepare for match and go onwards there. So I structured everything such that I had basically like 10 weeks after all of my interviews finished where I was like intensively working on the album and doing like, you know, lyric writing sessions and doing production sessions and all these different things where I really needed uninterrupted time. And so that kind of went through for 10 weeks there. That would have been like November, December period. And then after I got back and was still doing some of my elective rotations, I was just scheduling different times to go and record and be able to record in my studio and start to do the vocal performances. And then after that, then it's the mixing stage and it's, you know, fine tuning everything so that what I hear is exactly what I'm hoping the audience hears as well, whether it's different instruments, the vocals have to sound right, all the processing that goes into all the individual elements. And then it's listening, having other people listen to it. Cause now you've sat on a product for so long, extremely biased. My trick is that as soon as I get to a point where I'm like, this is the worst piece of work that I have ever made, it's probably done at that point, and I need to stop listening to it. So I got to that point 7 different times when I was working on the album for the 7 different songs. So I needed a lot of external output or external input. Of listening to the album and being like, okay, this sounds good. Like maybe this can be different, this and that, before going and putting the final touches on the album. So it was a year long process and it required a lot of planning, but I'm really happy with how it turned out. And the response has been really nice so far.
No, that's awesome. And so just out of curiosity, like out of all of the stages of design or the process that you went through, is there a stage in the process that you are more inclined to like, or you're more drawn to? Is it the writing stage? Is it the editing, mixing stage? Is it the actual performing stage? Like, what part of that process did you enjoy the most?
I think that, so between all of them, I think I like the part where, so a lot of the ways that I write the songs is I'll have the production of the instrumental completed first, and then I'll start to think about what melodies would sound good. In terms of that, and then I'll write lyrics after that. That's usually how the process goes. That phase of like me sitting with the mic and I'm just like trying out different melodies over the instrumental, I think that's one of the most exciting times because it happens very naturally where you're basically just ad-libbing the whole time and then you're like, wait a second, that melody sounded really good there, and then maybe I can take that and move it into this part, and you basically are arranging the entire thing as you go in a very fluid process. I think that that's the most exciting part because to me, it's one of the most organic periods, especially because this album was a solo effort. I think that in a collaborative effort for some of the other singles that I've done, it's a lot more fun for me to be on the production side as somebody else is coming up with a vocal melody and me being like, wait, I think I can, you know, I can play up this part and do this. I think I can make this instrument sound like this. So it depends on that solo versus collaborative. But for this project, it was definitely coming up with the vocal melodies once the instrumental had been composed.
What a great transition into our next question. you've collaborated with a wide range of artists, most recently with Jaimat, Love Singh, and The Musical Doc. How do you think, how have collaborative projects kind of helped you evolve and develop your voice in the music industry? Do you find it, is it more or less satisfying kind of having that partner with you in the soundstage? I mean, how important, like in general, is collaboration for, you know, growing one's platform?
Yeah. So I think that, I think you asked a couple of questions there. So I'll try and break it down there. So I think that I've been very fortunate to collaborate with a lot of people, a lot of talented artists, and they've all played such different roles in terms of my progression. One of the people that I worked with very early on was Jaimat, and he and I connected really well on a personal level. And oftentimes those are what make for the best collaborations, is where there's a value match, there's a belief match, there's a sensibility match that happens. And it's that that builds into the musical chemistry. So I remember we had come into a, we had done a remote session where he basically came in with his team, and then I went with my team, and we met up in this Airbnb outside of a lake in Michigan. And for a week, we were just like intensively working on different song ideas, different projects. And then once we were running out of ideas, then you're talking and you're figuring out about life, figuring out about the journey. He was a little bit more senior to me in terms of his experience in the industry. So that was really important because we didn't have the exact same goals, but I was able to learn a lot from him in terms of how he moves and then how I could use that to influence how I move in the industry. What are the different types of projects that I want to do? Who are the different people that I feel comfortable working with? Because unfortunately, the industry has an element of cutthroatedness, so to speak, where it's like, it's tough to ascertain like who's really being genuine or not, like who's just doing it because maybe you have more followers, more listeners, you know, who is really wanting to create art with you in a genuine way. So a lot of my early collaborations, whether it was Jaimat, The Musical Doc, Love Singh especially, like just working with them and being able to understand like these are the type of artists that I feel comfortable working with and I feel like bring out the best in me. And I feel like I'm being able to bring out the best in them as well, both on a personal level, as well as on a musical level. And then more recently, I've been really lucky to collaborate with a good friend of mine, Bass Doctor, who's also somebody who started off mainly in the dance circuit, you know, producing a lot of things. And now he's also transitioned into making original music. And he's somebody, you know, we've been able to work together on a lot of different projects, which are very outside of what I would typically do and also far outside what he would typically do. So it's one of those things where we're trying to come together where we sit on two different extremes in terms of how we approach music, how we approach instrumentation, how we approach arrangement. So all of these different things are really important from a music standpoint. The second part of your question in terms of how it's important to build a platform, ultimately, everybody has different listener bases, and every collaboration is an opportunity to get introduced to an audience that you might not have been able to be introduced to prior. But it has to be done in a very tasteful way, again, because it's tough to gauge how genuine some people are being, where they're like, I really want you to do a feature, I really want you to produce this song for me. I try and be very, very careful, and I'm very, what's the right word? I'm very specific with who I work with because I want to make sure that at the end of the day, I'm not really concerned about the followers, the listeners, or anything like that. I want to be able to have a product that if it comes on shuffle when I'm in my car, it should make me feel some type of way. That's the emotion that I'm always trying to go for. What the audience experiences after that is just a bonus.
Yeah, it's very intentional. That's great. You're trying to grow your sounds with with these experiences. Yeah, I think building off of that, are there any artists that you like look up to, just to kind of understand a little bit about like how, what type of music you enjoy listening to and what you want to build for yourself and your platform. Like, is there any artists that you look up to, and like who are they, and like why do you look up to them?
Yeah, I think the artists that inspire me, it depends on each of the different genres. So I grew up listening to a lot of Rabindra Sangeet, Kazi Nazrul Islam, and these are all like very traditional Bengali artists and Bengali songs that they wrote, different poems that they wrote. I think what is inspiring about that is the legacy that both of those artists have. I think it has transcended every era, every time, no matter how you slice it. And I think that's really important to me, because legacy is something that is very fascinating to me. The ability for work to transcend beyond you. When you're gone, your work will still be there. Your legacy will still be there. So it's interesting to have that within the community, so to speak, and growing up listening to that, hearing about that. It's very inspiring to me. And then in more recent times, some of the vocal artists that I really look up to, Shreya Ghoshal, Arijit Singh, are the two main ones. They're also Bengali, so I don't know if that's just contributing to that, but I think that their technical ability, their emotional range that they're able to project within their voices is unparalleled, and I think it's amazing. From a composition side, Pritam is one from Desi side, and then there's a lot of artists here in America who I grew up listening to who were very inspiring as well. The first time I listened to a rap song was by Lil Wayne. Lil Wayne is somebody as well who has like transcended all different time, all expectations of what he was to do. Jay-Z, some of the composers that I really enjoy listening to, Murda Beats, Metro Boomin. These are all people who I feel like are constantly trying to evolve their sound. And that's something that's really inspiring to me as well. Beyonce, for sure. And then somebody who I think is fascinating to watch from a career perspective is Justin Bieber, because we like grew up at the same time. And this is somebody who got thrust into the limelight so early and then had the world like drag on him forever and ever. And then he still came out of it and makes such amazing music, works with great people, and is somebody who's really focused on the art. And he's somebody that I've listened to all of his different projects and kind of seen the progression, and it's something that's really inspiring to listen to, and also know the background story, because I think it's one of those things, right? Like when you listen to different artists, you're like, what's their story? You know, what drives the different things that they're talking about, what they're singing about? And he's an artist that I can think of that really taps into, you know, him and his team taps into his own individual story in terms of the different songs that they put out, which is really inspiring for me.
Yeah, no, I think in terms of like that story that you're talking about, I think it's very important, and it's very apparent when you see and hear artists that have that and embrace that story, and sort of it kind of bleeds into their work, and you can really tell when that happens. And I think it's really exciting to see. And I guess speaking on your story specifically, you know, kind of transitioning into our next question here, in addition to you kind of mentioned before, you're a candidate for a doctor of medicine at the University of Toledo and on track to pursuing a residency, in addition to also having this kind of music or be going into the music industry. Have you had any kind of like difficulties or kind of roadblocks juggling between the two? And how does that kind of play into the story of your work?
Yeah. I think the pursuit of both is everything to me, because it's something that trying to do multiple things was something that I really started doing early on, whether it was high school or in college, just this idea of having my feet in different things, because I always felt like I was at my best. I never felt burnt out because there was always something else that I was being able to extract energy from and then give energy to. Medical school was definitely one of the toughest things to be able to do that balancing act with, because ultimately, I ended up pursuing surgery. I'm starting surgery residency in June or in July, you know, graduating at the end of this week. And med school has all these different phases where first 2 years are didactics and you're just in, you know, mainly in the classroom, and you're in the books. And then in third year and fourth year, you're in the wards, you're actually working, and then you're being expected to study on top of that. So it was all about time management. And I think what was interesting is I was pretty naive in the beginning. I was like, no problem. Like, I've done this for so many years. First year med student, I saw that I was still being able to balance things relatively well and still feel healthy while doing it. And then we have an exam called Step 1. It's one of our licensing exams. And that wrecked me because I heard that, okay, when you're studying for Step 1, you should not do anything but studying for Step 1. And this was completely different than what I've done my whole life, which is if I have something coming up, I'm still going to make sure I'm doing other things to make sure that I have things that are continuing to inspire me and to rejuvenate me. And I did not do that for Step 1. And it was a terrible experience. So then I come out of Step 1 and I'm like, man, I never want to do that again. I'm going to go twice as hard in terms of making sure that I do everything I can to keep this balance up, because it is really where I feel happiest, where I feel the most fulfilled. It feels the most rewarding because they're both demanding in different ways. And I think that it's just important to have things, especially when you have something in medicine. You get told it all the time as you're going through training. They're like, oh, like, you're a physician, you're doing X, Y, Z. Make sure you have outside interests. And then they don't give you any time to do anything outside. And so it's something where, again, it's all about intentionality for me. You know, I'll come home. Let's say I have a really long clinic day and I'm coming home at 6 p.m., 7 p.m. I'll at least try and work on a song in some way, shape, or form. Like, whether it's like coming up with a melody, coming up with different instrumentation, even if it's just like on my phone, like recording a voice memo and making sure that I'm keeping ideas flowing. That way I'm able to continue the balance and really make sure that I'm planning out my time. It's all about the time management. So it's a difficult balance. I don't know if we had this interview in 1 year, I don't know what I would tell you differently. Like, after residency has started, because residency, again, is a different ballgame. You know, surgical residency is really demanding. It's one of the reasons why I felt really strongly about putting out the debut album before residency, because I did not know when I would have time like this again in order to devote, you know, to a long form project and being able to work on it. So the balance has been okay. There's been some changes as we've gone through in med school. Who knows what residency will be, but I'll always try and make sure that I'm keeping these multiple things going and make sure that I continue to try and express myself.
Yeah. First of all, congrats. Like you said, you're congratulating soon. That's amazing. That's crazy. Anything in the medical field, people congratulate. That's amazing when you guys graduate and get over. That's awesome. Yeah, I think it's good that it's important, like you said, to carve out time for yourself. I've heard kind of scary stories with people going through med school and just that their mental health just takes a nosedive because they just can't juggle at all. It's really great that you're carving out time for it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I know you most probably had the decision to go into medicine and most likely surgery like really early on. But mm-hmm. I guess at that point in time, would you have ever considered making music as your primary career path? Or like, what did you kind of, I guess, once you fell in love with medicine too, like, how do you kind of see your like these two professions per se, like kind of in your life?
Yeah, you know, it's a question I always get, you know, like on the medicine side, my colleagues will always ask, they're like, all right, if the music blows up, will you just do music? And then on the music side, they always ask, okay, like, once the doctor stuff takes off, you're just going to do the doctor stuff, right? And I think it's really interesting because we have this expectation, especially in some of these demanding careers where like there's an understanding that, okay, what does a career in music look like? You're probably making a lot of music, you have to tour, you got to do all this merch, you got to do interviews, like, there's an understanding that the time that goes into it is crazy. And then similarly on the medicine side, there's an understanding that the time demands are a lot. And so for me, I've just felt like I've felt the best when I'm doing both. So let's project that a couple of years. What does that look like? You know, it's something where as a surgeon, you have options in terms of the hospital deals that you sign. In terms of understanding like, okay, how many days are you going to be operating? How many days are you going to be doing clinic? And trying to find some way to balance that in terms of whether I have a studio or I'm going to a studio, figuring out different ways to still keep creating music accessible. I think that's the biggest part. And nowadays it's really easy, right? The laptop that I'm speaking to you on, I make all my music on here. That was not the case many years ago, where you had to be reliant on really big power stations in order to be able to create. I think there's apps on the phone also that you can create full-scale productions on. So having that accessibility, I think, is really important to being able to balance both. I would never just do one. I think that that's a sure shot way of burnout, and I would not be able to do it. To put it plainly, I saw it during the step one period where I was just focusing on medicine, did not work out. Early on in COVID, when we didn't have as many demands in terms of med school, because we were just doing remote lectures, that was another time where the balance shifted really heavily towards music. Having creative block is the most frustrating thing, where it's like, all right, I've got 10 hours to make a song and nothing comes out. So,
right, right.
I think that's the great part of having the multiple interests and having the multiple passions and being intentional about doing it in a way where you're not compromising your health, obviously, but keeping it up so that you're always refreshed. You're always ready to go, rejuvenated, and you feel like you have purpose. I think that's the thing that's most important is what's your purpose? You know, what do you tell yourself when you wake up in the morning in terms of what you want to do with the day, with the week? For me, it's trying to make sure that I'm able to keep these things up.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of our guests have that similar mindset. And I think it's a great trend that we're kind of seeing. Like, we've had like artists, we have entrepreneurs who are like, yeah, my day job is like, I'm a financial, like an analyst, but like, and then I write books and like,
yeah,
I do
this
public. It's very great. I think it's a kind of a shift that's really good to see, because you're now able to like go after all your passions. It's not like, oh, one or the other. So exactly. That's really great.
Yeah. The way that I phrased it is like, I think before we were so used to a career, meaning that you only had one occupation. And I think that a career nowadays can be made up of multiple occupations. Like, the career is individual. It's not tied to a specific job. And I think that like you said, I think that's the trend that's happening, and I think it's great. I think that great products, great forms of human expression, and just great people overall are coming more into the forefront. And I think that's really important to push society forward.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great transition to next question. Before we wrap up with our episode, we have like two last questions. The first one is, we always like to ask our guests, for individuals who are trying to break into the space, like trying to make their own music, trying to create their own work, what advice would you give them in getting started? And how would you kind of, if you had to do the process all over again from the very beginning, what would be some things that you wish you had?
Yeah. Is understanding the space. I think that what you see online is not the real world at all, and especially so in music, because, you know, the accessibility to be a musician right now is very high. It's a very low threshold in terms of what you need in order to create music, which I think is amazing. I think it's great that it's so accessible. What the downside of that is that it creates a mismatch in expectations on what it is that you're able to do with the music. Music, in terms of having a sustainable occupation with it, there's so much that goes into it, because everything is digital now. So when you're making the music, it's not just about the music creation process. It's also about the marketing aspects, the legal aspects, the distribution aspects, and all the different ways that this product that you're making, how can it generate revenue for you so that you can continue to invest in yourself and your company and your brand, and continue to grow forward so you can make more things. People only hear about the viral stories, right? So the expectation is like, okay, I made a song and I put it out. I've been promoting it for 7 days. Why haven't I gone viral yet? And why can't I quit the job that I don't want to do yet? And I think that the expectations are really important, that it's very difficult to make it unless you have a plan, unless you have a team. And understanding your skill set, what is it that you bring to the table? Where are you strong in? And where do you need other people to fill in the gaps? It's a team sport, just like any other endeavor. And so I think that's something that I wish I knew early on. I really started Royal when I was like coming out of college, like 2017, 2018 is when I started. And original music wasn't even on my radar then. I was just thinking about music production. I didn't know anything. I didn't know in terms of like legal aspects of music, copyright, you know, copyright infringement, what is a derivative work, all the different mixes and mashups that we hear on social media right now. They're technically all illegal unless somebody has actually cleared it. And so you have people that create these huge platforms off of these, and then a label comes swooping in and they're like, you stole all of our products, we're shutting down your account. And now this whole platform that you worked on creating is no longer a thing. And you're reliant again on word of mouth to try and build your brand again. So these are things we didn't know when we were really making the mixes and making the mashups. And then once you start doing original music, how do you protect your original music? Because anybody can copy and paste things nowadays, whether it's a Word document, whether it's an audio file, video file. So understanding how to make something you and understanding how you can make yourself like not as easily replicated, therefore that's more genuinely you, I think those are the things that are important to keep in mind when you're coming up.
That's amazing. And I can't top that. So I'll just leave it there for anyone who needed that advice and is looking to produce music. I'll just leave that there hanging. I guess as a final question, you know, just out of curiosity, if you could perform your music on a stage of your choice, any stage in the world, what stage would that be and why?
Any stage in the world? I have not been around the world too much, so my understanding of the other stages.
Okay, in the U.S. In the U.S.
In the U.S. In the U.S. I would say Madison Square Garden for sure.
Okay.
I think that's like that's a legendary venue in terms of. You know, in terms of the American music scene, if you have performed at Madison Square Garden and you have sold it out, you have made it. You have done it. You have achieved, you know, you have achieved eminence, so to speak.
Right.
It's like there's this respect that is in your music. You have a fan base that's loyal enough to come out to the shows. So I don't really know if I see that in my lifetime happening for the kind of music that I make, but who knows? I'll stay optimistic about it.
No, that's awesome. You dream big. It's great. And I guess with that, we will conclude this episode of Brown Art Network. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Royal's debut album called Shanak is on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, etc. We'll put the link in the description, so go check it out. Royal, thank you so much for your time. This is a great conversation. I feel like we covered so many topics and got to know you, so this has been great.
Thank you, Kirti and Sneha. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of Brown Art Network. We hope you enjoyed hearing all the wonderful conversations we had today. Go check us out on Instagram at RedefiningABCD and feel free to let us know your thoughts on this episode. And as always, if you know anyone who'd be interested in being interviewed for a future Brown Art Network segment, either direct message us on Instagram or email us at redefiningabcd@gmail.com. Stay safe and happy. We'll see y'all in the next one.